Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Karen Brown. Thanks for checking out the Mississippi Edition podcast. If you like what you hear, click subscribe, hit like, or leave us a comment if your app has that feature. Then find other MPB podcasts by searching MPB Think Radio on your favorite podcasting platform. Thanks. Good morning. It's 8:30 on Thursday, August 5th. I'm Karen Brown, and this is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. On today's show, the Delta variant transformed the fight against COVID-19. What's next? Then the survivor of a COVID breakthrough infection reflects on his experience. And we talk with writer Robert H. Mayer. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. For months now, we've known that the Delta variant of COVID-19 is extremely infectious. It's at least twice as transmissible as the original strain of the disease. Dr. Thompson Liddell, who studies infectious diseases at Hattiesburg Clinic, explains why that's the case.
This virus is replicating quickly, and it is concentrating in the areas that are able for us to spread the virus from one person to another. So instead of having a smaller amount of COVID being passed from person to person, there's a higher amount that's breathed out into the air, that's sneezed out, that's coughed out, and it just has the ability to spread more easily this way because of this.
Does it go a longer distance, or is that the same?
It's not that it necessarily goes a longer distance, but if you think of these little particles spreading out every time we talk or sneeze, if it's fewer particles, well, they're not going to spread out as thickly or as far, though the distance probably isn't a significant amount difference. When we think of aerosolized particles, the ones that float through the sky, not the ones that are droplet or drop to the ground, they're able to fill up a fair bit of space. The amount that we're able to spread is impacted by this fact that we just have more of it that we're shedding to other people.
Now, there are three characterizations of variants, as I understand. Variants of interest, variants of concern, and variants of high consequence. Delta variant is a variant of concern. What is it that defines that variant of concern?
Sure. So there are some variants that don't even really make the list. And then there are those that have changes that may or may not affect the way the virus behaves. And those become variants of interest. They're ones that we've noted may have a change on a particular protein of the virus that is something we kind of have to watch for. A variant of concern is one that has had a significant change and changes the way that it behaves, so that it's more able to cause us infection or transmission or become a predominant strain, like what we're seeing with the Delta variant. And then high consequence, just to round it out, are those variants that we really don't have treatments for and we don't have prevention for and testing for, anything that really sidesteps our ability to take care of it and keep it from becoming overwhelming, even more so than what we're facing now. That would be a variant of high consequence.
If our population doesn't get vaccinated, what are the possible consequences in regard to development of another variant? How do new variants emerge, and what can we expect if we don't get this under control now?
Right, and I think that's the the most important thing for us to think about right now, certainly on an individual basis as we face this Delta variant, we all have risk, and those that we love have risk. But I think that as we look to the future, we really have a lot more reason to take this seriously also. The way these variants come about is a process that viruses all do, and it's when they're transcribing or when they're copying themselves or creating new proteins to rebuild new viruses and spread, they go through a process called transcription where they make a copy of themselves. When they do, they make mistakes. They always make mistakes. It's inevitable, and they make a lot of mistakes. It's a very imperfect process. Every mistake that's made isn't necessarily significant, but we're talking about millions and then billions of mistakes being made over time. And just inevitably, we're going to have a mistake that is significant. So a lot of those mistakes don't change anything for the virus. Occasionally, those mistakes will actually harm the virus, which is great. But just as occasionally they harm the virus, occasionally they help the virus. And when they do, they can create a new variant. So if you're thinking about all of these mistakes being made over time, the more time we allow them and the more virus that's out there attempting to replicate itself, just the higher, much higher the odds are that there's going to be a worse variant of COVID sooner. So the way that we can slow that process down and limit the ability to form a new variant is by blocking the virus in its tracks and causing fewer replications, so fewer mutations and therefore fewer beneficial mutations and fewer variants. We do that by the things that we already know, and that's all prevention. We do that by prevention. So once COVID is spread, it's already gone on its course, but if we are able to vaccinate, if we're able to not be around others when we're sick, if we're able to wear masks and guard ourselves from making others sick, then we're able to slow that process down just through these common sense, simple ways. It doesn't mean that our lives have to be changed more than they necessarily already are, but just these little tweaks to our lives that can make significant lower risk for other people.
Talking about masking, this is a very specific question. Are there masks that are better than others?
Certainly, yes, in short. Some of the more obvious ones, I think, would be any masks that aren't solid. I've seen some masks that people wear that have holes in them that clearly defeat the purpose. There was a lot of information coming out about different types of masks when all of this started. I think the surgical masks that we buy are probably the best mask that we have. I think that is a reasonable goal.
Dr. Thompson Liddell is an infectious disease expert at Hattiesburg Clinic. I thank you very much for all that good information.
Thank you. And thank you for all you're doing to help your listeners learn more about this. Appreciate you having me.
Coming up, the survivor of a COVID-19 breakthrough infection shares his story. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
This podcast is a local production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting and depends on the support of listeners like you. If you can, please donate today at mpbonline.org. And thanks.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Karen Brown. The state has just reported 3,164 new cases of COVID-19, along with 16 related deaths. This, as the State Department of Health recommends that all people, both vaccinated and unvaccinated, resume mask wearing in crowded indoor settings. The guidance comes on the heels of new CDC research that indicates a small but non-zero chunk of vaccinated people are still susceptible to the virus. MPB's Ashley Norwood spoke with one vaccinated Mississippian who's recovering from a so-called breakthrough case of COVID-19. We're calling him Joe. He's asked us not to use his real name for fear of retribution from his employer.
I got vaccinated. My first shot was in February, the end of February. and I got my second shot right before spring break, I think the first week in March.
Okay.
That's when I became fully vaccinated.
So when you got the vaccine, in your mind, feeling like, okay, I've got this protection now, did you start to ease up on some precautions, like maybe social distancing or wearing your masks?
I did get a little big-headed. I was like, you know, I'm fully vaxxed. And I think the next week, I went to Atlanta for spring break to visit my cousin. One thing I did, I kept my mask on. Because I knew that I wasn't, I guess they had to wait two weeks before the being fully vaxxed kick in. So I kept my mask on the whole time. But I did get a little big-headed saying, like, you know, I'm outside now because I'm back. And I can do, you know, whatever I want. But apparently it doesn't work like that. So I say definitely wear your mask because that's the protection right there. It really is.
So when did you contract COVID and how do you think you got it?
I contracted COVID at work. We had a meeting. It was a big meeting room, but it was a lot of people in there. And somebody, I guess, attended the meeting and was sick and didn't know it. They might have been asymptomatic and, you know, and was spreading it to everybody. And the one thing I was shocked when I went to the doctor, and I thought it was an allergy infection. I really did, because I have allergies. And so I was like, well, I was just sneezing and got a little headache. So I took some meds for that, and I noticed it didn't go away. So I was like, let me go to the doctor. They swabbed, they tested me for flu, pneumonia, strep, and then she said COVID. The doctor was shocked. She was like, well, I'm going to test you for COVID just in case. It came back. All the rest of the tests came back negative, but SARS, COV2. And so I was like, wow. I said, man, I got COVID. So the symptoms that I had, you know, it started off with the headache, and then I had a sore throat, and then I had stuffiness of the nose. It's all related to allergies. So I'm thinking like, okay, I got an allergy infection. Then I noticed one thing, I was tired. I couldn't get up. So that Sunday morning, I woke up with chills, shaking, couldn't get out of bed. And my dad was like, what's wrong with you? And I was like, I don't know. I said, this is crazy. I feel like I've been to the gym and did a great workout and been hit by a bus at the same, or a car at the same time. So I was in pain all over. So around about 11 o'clock that day, I got up, I went to the beach. We was on vacation. I've got to tell you that we were on vacation with all my family members. I went to the beach. I sat in the sun and I was sweating like I was really sweating. I just laid out, went to sleep 3 hours, got back up. You know, I was fine. Then at night, it kind of happened all over again. I was in a pool party. I don't know if I told you that for the pool party too. So I was doing like normal activities and I didn't have my mask on. And so I was spreading it to everybody and didn't know it.
When you got the diagnosis, knowing that at that point you had been fully vaccinated, did you feel as fearful knowing that you had some of that protection? Like, were you still pretty afraid, or did you feel somewhat hopeful or glad you were vaccinated?
I was definitely glad that I was vaccinated, because my doctor told me that if I wasn't vaccinated, I probably would have been in the hospital because of my asthma, which I did have. I have respiratory symptoms with COVID. So I had like the shortness of breath and my chest was really tight. I can be sitting down and it felt like I have an asthma attack, basically. And I wasn't even moving. So the doctor was like, if I wasn't vaccinated, I probably, because I went back to the doctor and she told me that if I wasn't vaccinated, I could have been in the hospital on a ventilator, you know. And my coworker who just made it back, she was in the hospital on the ventilator. But hers wasn't as bad, so she got out. She only stayed on it for like a day, but she got back out because she did well. And the doctor told her if she wasn't vaccinated, she probably would have died.
So tell me, how do you feel about the CDC now kind of rolling back the advice to wear masks, even for vaccinated people, especially in places where we're seeing this large, extreme surge in cases. How do you feel about, you know, just the idea of having a mask up again?
I feel like actually they shouldn't have lifted the mask, even for fully vaccinated and unvaccinated people. So I'm glad that they are rolling back that statement and having people who are fully vaccinated, unvaccinated, to wear masks, because it's not like they have proof to saying, okay, you vaccinated, you don't have to wear your mask. So everybody should wear it, because if I did have my mask on at the meeting, I probably wouldn't have caught COVID. I got relaxed. You know, our college lifted the ban, and I didn't have my mask on. I didn't. And it's kind of like when I took the mask off, I caught COVID. And I hate to, them being real. It's kind of like, dang, I went a whole year and a half without catching it. And now that I've gotten relaxed, it's kind of like, dog, I caught it.
That was Joe, who experienced a COVID-19 breakthrough infection. Public health experts say only a small number, about 5% of new Mississippi COVID-19 cases and deaths, occur in vaccinated people. Coming up, a conversation with writer Robert H. Mayer. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
Deep South Dining is the show all about the culture of Southern flavor. From fried chicken and collard greens to shrimp and grits and a glass of sweet tea. Subscribe now to the podcast using any podcast app or download our MPB public media app.
This is Mississippi Edition. I'm Karen Brown. The new book, In the Name of Emmett Till, reflects on the role of young Mississippians in the civil rights movement. It explores the stories of people like Brenda Travis and Hollis Watkins, who bore witness to the Jim Crow South and set out at great personal risk to dismantle it. Robert H. Mayer, who wrote the book, has long been fascinated by American history.
I taught high school for 12 years, and then I was a teacher educator at Moravian College, now Moravian University, for 29 years, and my area was social studies. So I'm very interested in engaging young people in history and engaging young people in thinking about history. What does it mean to think like a historian?
People in Mississippi are well aware of the horrific murder of Emmett Till. You write about stories of activists, young activists, beyond his death. And some of these activists are not well known. Who are they?
Well, I do write about some who people may know, like Edgar Evers and Bob Moses, who we just lost last week. But then the heart and soul of the book are the young people who would be much less known. We would not know them. People like Brenda Travis, Desha Ida Mae Holland, Sam Block.
Would you tell us about Brenda Travis, why her story is significant?
Absolutely. Her story is wonderful, and she actually also has a wonderful memoir. Brenda Travis was deeply moved when she was 10 by the murder of Emmett Till, and she swore when she was 10, she said one day that she would do something about the conditions that led to the murder of Emmett Till. When she was 16, she took that opportunity. She's from Macomb, and it just happened in 1961. She becomes involved in voter registration, going door to door, trying to get people to register. But she gets frustrated by that, and she goes on and decides she wants to do a little more what's called direct action. She volunteers for a sit-in, and she goes to the local Greyhound station with two of her peers, high school students. She goes in, she goes to the white section of the terminal, and she goes to buy tickets. Before long, she is arrested. Before that, people are yelling names at her using the N-word. Then the police come, arrest her. She spends 29 days in jail. When she gets out, she goes back to her high school, to re-enroll, and the principal tells her she's expelled. Word gets around the high school, and 114 of her peers walk out of the high school in support of Brenda. And that's a reflection of just the, you know, the one act of hers inspiring people in her community, but that inspiration spread throughout the state.
Who was Sam Block?
Sam Block grew up in Cleveland, Mississippi, and he too was moved by the murder of Emmett Till. And he is invited by Bob Moses to start a voter registration drive. He picks Greenwood, Mississippi, because it's close to where Emmett Till was murdered. He goes into Greenwood by himself. He begins canvassing, talking to people. He goes to the pool halls and the laundromat, to the grocery stores. First, he just starts to talk to them to get to know them, and then he talks about voter registration. From there, he starts to have some meetings. He starts at the Elks Hall. An earlier activist, Cleveland Jordan, introduces him to the people. And he begins to have this drive for voter registration in Greenwood. And from his solitary entrance, the movement grows. He attracts people from the community. The main idea of what he's trying to do to build a community base. He gets people involved. Bob Moses sees that he's having some success and sends more people in. And then he goes on to bring people down to the courthouse to get them to register. So that is the heart and soul of what Sam Block does. Just from that single entry, he builds this really strong movement.
We've talked with people in Mississippi, leaders, activists, people who were activists during the civil rights movement. And some of them say that the youth of today in Mississippi are really not interested. They don't understand their connection to the past. They're simply not interested. Is that one of the reasons why you wrote this book aimed at young adults to get past that apathy they might have?
Absolutely. It's very much a book intending to inspire people, because the people that I write about are just so incredible. And I want to introduce young people to these activists in hopes that it will excite them and encourage them to get involved. Well, not just young people involved in thinking, but everybody.
The book is called In the Name of Emmett Till, How the Children of the Mississippi Freedom Struggle Showed Us Tomorrow. And we've been speaking with its author, Robert H. Mayer. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the Mississippi Edition podcast from MPB News and MPB Think Radio. Don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already. And if your app lets you, leave a comment or review. We really do appreciate it. Remember, you can always get in touch with MPB News on Facebook and Twitter, and fresh episodes of the podcast are posted every weekday morning. I'm Karen Brown. Thanks for listening. This is Mississippi Edition from MPB Think Radio.